Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host and producer for Right Here, Right Now is Andy Lowe. Andy has his own show, Renegade Radio, on Business Radio X. That show really rocks. How's that sound? Good morning.
I love the sound of that. A rocking show, and it is a good morning. Speaking of rocking, let's talk about you. So understand you got back out and got the old legs moving and doing a little jogging today.
You didn't have to say old legs, but yes.
Well, you know, not old, O-L-E. That's okay. Very different, right?
There you go.
The E versus the D makes all the difference.
That is right. That's right. I've decided I like to run. I've always liked to run, and we got out and got it done.
4 miles, I understand.
Exactly.
Very nice.
Not bad when you're in your 60s, I think.
I know. I'm going to be having a struggle to keep up with you here soon.
Yeah, right. You're a triathlete. I don't think we don't have to worry about that. You know, we have to behave ourselves this morning. We got pressure on us. We've got the high mucky muck sitting here.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like I feel like I'm getting an internal review this morning or something, right?
I hope it's you and not me. But we're glad to have Lee Cantor and Stone Payton in the studio with us. Stone used to be my co-host. Vital Cog, right? Isn't that it? He's smiling. They have Chris, is it Delkel? In the studio watching me at work. God help him. Here we go.
Yeah, we're going to show him how to do everything wrong today so that, you know, going forward, he'll understand the right way to do things.
That's
sound about right?
I like that idea. Well, several weeks ago, I listened in on a discussion about using blogs to create a book, and I've had that conversation with a number of individuals over the years. You know, is it good to create a book out of one's blog? Perhaps you're one of those individuals that blogs regularly, and you share your ideas or reflect on the world. You offer your unique perspective on your business or profession. Perhaps you've made a pilgrimage or extended journey and blogged about it. And for some folks, I know that the followers of their blog have encouraged people to write a book out of the blogs. You like that idea, but is it a good idea? Well, from my perspective as a writer, editor, and writing coach with Right Choice Services and host of Right Here, Right Now, my answer is a resounding yes, but. Nothing like being assertive, is there, Andy?
At least you have a clear stance here.
Yes, I do. Well, it's been a long time since I've invoked our Right Here, Right Now protocol, but I get to do that protocol today because it's appropriate. Ladies first, but we have two guests who are going to provide us with their unique perspective. Michelle Sharp's book will be published in August. She based it on blogs she has written. And Jeff Sheehan is an expert on social media. He blogs regularly and invites colleagues to provide guest blogs. Jeff also has nearly 93,000 followers on Twitter. I'm sure he's going to tell us about that later on, because I am going to start with Michelle. Michelle Sharp and her husband Wayne sailed their boat from Bayfield, Wisconsin, through the Great Lakes, down the St. Lawrence River and Seaway, into the Atlantic Ocean, around the Maritime Provinces, down the east coast of the United States to Punta Gorda, Florida. And Michelle blogged the entire way. Her book, Adventures of a Once Reluctant Sailor, A Journey of Guts, Growth, and Grace, is in the final stages of editing prior to publication. And Michelle has called in from beautiful Plymouth, Minnesota this morning, where it's an hour earlier. Michelle, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Tim. Thank you.
You picked up on your name. I'm glad you did. From blog to book, did you anticipate that you would eventually have a book when you began your blog?
Not at all. In fact, I didn't even know if I would have a complete blog at the end of the blog.
Uh-huh. When did you begin to think in terms of a book, or didn't you? Was that foisted upon you?
Well, as I continued to blog, readers were really enjoying it and encouraging me, and they would say, oh, you should turn this into a book, and I'd think, oh, that's very nice of them, but no, I don't think so. But I just it was still niggling at me in the back of my mind. And last year I decided, okay, I need to do this, and I'm going to do it at the beginning of 2012. And that's when the whole thing started.
Now, you've called it a once reluctant sailor. Can you talk to us about that? You weren't just running around with all kinds of excitement to take this trip?
No. My husband and I had sailed in Lake Superior up in the Apostle Islands outside of Bayfield for many years. But it was Wayne is the sailor and was the sailor. And I went along with it because it was his thing and I wanted to support him as his wife. And we had a lot of great time sailing in the Apostle Islands, but that was as far as I wanted to go. It was safe there. We were always within sight of land. We had done a trip to Isle Royal, and that was about 100 miles. And that was really scary for me because we were out in open water in Lake Superior and with no land in sight. And that was out of my comfort zone. And after that trip, it was great, but I was content to sail the Apostle Islands.
And we didn't need to go any further. So then how did you wind up making, what was it, about a 5,000-mile trip on a boat? Why did you do
that? Well, I wasn't going to make the trip. We had bought a home in Punta Gorda, and we needed a way to get the boat down there. And there were several routes we could have taken, and the other routes involved taking down the mast, and that would have been a big production. And we decided to do the St. Lawrence Seaway. And when Wayne and I started talking about the St. Lawrence Seaway, I started getting interested in taking the trip myself because I like adventure. I love wilderness. And that was the clincher for me.
And you could also see land more readily, right?
Well, in parts of it.
Parts of it, that's true. You're in Minnesota. Your boat's in Wisconsin. For people who are geography challenged, help them understand how close Bayfield really is and why people living in the Twin Cities would have a ship or a boat on Lake Superior in Wisconsin.
Well, Bayfield is about 4 hours north of Minneapolis, and it's often called the Caribbean of the North because it's beautiful islands, beautiful wilderness. It's national lakeshore. It's been said to be second only to the San Juan Islands as a sailing mecca in the United States. And so it's beautiful there.
Okay. You mentioned that there were several other routes that you could have taken to get the boat from Wisconsin down to the Gulf of, that's the Gulf of Mexico down there, right? Or is it called something else up against Florida?
Gulf of Mexico.
Okay, that's what I thought. Talk about geographically challenged here. But you mentioned in passing that you would have had to take down the mast. Are you serious? You mean you can really lower the mast on boats when you're going like that?
Well, not easily. Usually when you do a route where it requires taking down the mast because of low bridges, there are crews there who will help you do it, and it's not a matter of just, it's not a telescopic type mast. You have to take down all the rigging and everything that holds the mast up and then carry the mast through on the deck of your sailboat. And once we saw how much was involved in just when we commissioned the boat in putting up the mast and all the rigging, we just did not think that was something we wanted to do.
So the route that you wound up taking was longer than you had anticipated, but you also didn't have to lower the mast. Is that correct?
Right. It was about 1,500 miles longer than the next shortest route. And that would have been like through the Hudson River and the Erie Canal and through New York. And then there's another one that goes down the Mississippi and through through different waterways to the Gulf of Mexico.
But you still had bridges to go underneath and didn't have to worry about clearance, as I recall. Because I did get to read your stuff, didn't I?
Yes, you did a few times, I think.
There we go. What kinds of stuff, let our listeners know, what kinds of stuff did you blog about when you were out there? And how many days did it take to make the trip? And then what were the kinds of things you wrote about?
It was 109 miles. And I wrote about overcoming my fears. I wrote about spiritual aspect of the trip. I talked about, in the St. Lawrence Seaway, one of the best experiences was close encounters with whales. And we didn't even realize that when we were planning the trip. We did not know that we would be having that. And trying to, I explained the joy and the enchantment of being in that environment, just us and the whales. And close up so that you could hear them breathing and spouting, and it was just awesome.
Go ahead.
And I explained some of the frustrations we had and having to move along quickly because we had a time crunch, and that's always a bad idea when you're sailing because a sailboat can only move so fast, but we had time restrictions and weather being one of them. We left later than we had intended to. And I had frustrations about having to move along and wanting to enjoy this place and stay here, but then we wouldn't have as much time down the road. And I just wrote about all the places and our feelings about them and the whole experience of the trip and the unexpected blessings and surprises that we had along the way.
Did you use every blog in the book? I really don't remember. Or did you edit some of them out?
I included all of them. I might have taken out, I think I took out one or part of one because it could have gotten me in legal trouble.
Oh, okay.
Aside from that, I included the whole blog. And the blog was like a character in the book. It was because the blog was such an important experience, keeping that blog and the interaction with the readers, it became a living thing to me. It was a connection to people. It was it helped ward off loneliness. It gave us, we got lots of encouragement, and it was a journal. It became so many things, and I wanted to keep the integrity of the blog, so I kept it all in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I made it more than what the blog was. It became much bigger than that.
Yeah, and I think that's a critical piece that I would want our listeners to understand. The blog, as I recall, was pretty much, you kept it intact. As you said, you took out a couple of parts, but you allowed for some segue between certain sections, I think. You allowed some explanation so that it had some meaning and impact to the people that were reading. You did get comments from people along the way, didn't you?
Yes, a lot of comments, and that became really vital to me, and it kept me going with the blog. I said at the beginning of the interview that I didn't know if I would if it would be a whole entire blog for the whole trip, but the encouragement and support and feedback, it became so interactive that it became very a compulsion to me to blog.
And you even hooked Wayne into having to do some writing, didn't you?
I did, and he appeals to the more experienced mariner from a technical and nautical standpoint, and so he makes his contributions, and people ask questions in the comments of the blog, and I addressed those. We answered a lot of questions from readers in the book, and so it really appeals to, it started out appealing to friends and family. That was our target audience. But then as it evolved into a book, the audience became broader, and I added things that would appeal to that broader audience.
Okay. And I'm thinking about all this as you talk, as we work together in helping you get that to where it's going to be. What was A Reluctant Sailor, Journey of Guts, Growth, and Grace? Where would you say you had the guts and the growth on that trip?
The guts. It took more guts in the beginning because I was not a sailor. I'd never docked a boat before or helped dock a boat, well, except in Bayfield, in a very limited capacity. But I was a real rookie. Even though we had sailed for years, we had raced small boats. And so we're talking I was at ground level in my learning curve. And so as I developed confidence, it took less guts. And so that evolved as the trip went on and I gained confidence and realized it wasn't as scary being out there as I imagined it would be. And the growth evolved as I gained confidence and became a sailor. And by the end of the trip, I really was a sailor. And the grace was there throughout the journey, and in so many ways, God's grace followed us.
And you do an amazing job of presenting that in your book without being overwhelming or turning it into a religious type of book. I particularly appreciated that, especially there were a couple of days in which you just said, let's look back over what's happened of late. Two times you needed to be off to a hospital, and those two times you were in a location where, in fact, you could get to a hospital. That in itself is just almost like an act of grace, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Now, I have images, too. At one point, you got to climb up the mast, didn't you?
Yeah, well, not like a monkey. Wayne actually hoisted me.
That's right. Your task was to do what, and when you got there, you couldn't do it.
Change the light bulb.
Change the light bulb.
I had to go up and change. The mast is 62 feet high, and the light bulb is at the very top, and so Wayne hoisted me up. And I got there, and I had a frozen shoulder, and I could not reach high enough to take the light bulb out, so he had to let me down. He had to go up after all. Which he does not like to go up.
He doesn't like heights, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I took my camera. I brought my camera up there and took my time taking pictures.
You had to have enjoyed that. What has the impact been? Normally ask people on their business, but Wayne's retired, and you guys just do a bunch of stuff. But what has the impact been on your life, should we say, now that you have written this book, it's about to come out, people know that it's gone from being a blog into a book?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's a very personal book, and I'm an introvert, and so in a sense, it's a little bit scary to put myself out there. And so I've had to deal with a little bit of that. Writing the book has been an amazing experience, and obsessive experience. I wrote obsessively, and Wayne can attest to that fact. And right now, I'm just ready to. The book will be out in a couple weeks. I'm getting the proof this week, and I'm looking forward to sharing our experiences with everyone who would like to read it.
And some of the experiences I recall so well, as you start off saying, you're going to be in this boat with your husband. You had been married, 20-some years, hadn't you, at that time?
Yeah, 29, I think.
Oh, I guess that was 20-some, wasn't it? 29.
Oh, 30.
But you're going to be in this boat where there's the captain's deck, so to speak, and then the down below. And if you get mad, there's no place really to go, is there?
No, there is not.
And so I know you wrote a little bit about that, but that never really became an issue. That I appreciated, as you shared in the blog, how husband and wife can really get along in closed confinement quarters, should we say, for an extended period of time. Plus, while you were out there, just before you took off, your brother was diagnosed with cancer. You just had a whole lot of stuff going on, but you still made the trip. You still blogged about all of that.
Yes, it was important to blog about that. And a lot of people said, I could not do that with my spouse. I could not go on a trip like that and be in closed quarters with my spouse for that length of time. And I think you go into something like that knowing ahead of time that you can do it. And then because you have to, your survival depends upon it, you do everything you can to make it pleasant for each other and not make it... There are a lot of things you can fight about, believe me, but you just have to get beyond that and look at, this is an experience of a lifetime. We are not going to mess it up by fighting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what advice would you give to our listeners on blogging and creating a book or simply writing a book? It's your turn to give the advice to all who are listening.
Oh, wow. Well, I can tell you what my experience was. I thought I would take the blog and just make a few edits and send it off to a publisher. And that was not the case. Once I got it into my word processing program and started working on it, I realized it needed more work. And then my editor pointed out to me that it needed a lot more work. And the photos were really important in saying what my words didn't say. In the blog, I relied heavily on the photos, and in the book, they really helped tell this story too. It's not a seamless transition from blog to book. It required a whole looking at it from scratch and really starting over, keeping the content, but changing the format and reworking it a lot.
And you did a great job. I had the delight and the opportunity to serve as Michelle's editor, and my permanent guest host, Vanessa, did the layout and cover design. So this is kind of a right here, right now team effort that we're excited about, and we're looking forward to seeing that first copy. So, Michelle, how do people contact you? They want to learn more about blogging into a book. They want to learn more about being a reluctant sailor and taking a trip like that. Get a copy of your book. How would they do that?
Well, they can go to my website, reluctantsailor.net. I'm also on Facebook. My email address is reluctantsailor@me.com, and I'd be glad to answer any questions anyone has.
Great.
Michelle, I got a question for you before we move on to our next guest. You know, you were talking about at the end there about the pleasant experience and, you know, and the opportunity of a lifetime. And I was looking on your blog, and you have the Admiral Michelle's Laws of Cruising. And it's really like a Murphy's Laws list, right? It's like if it can go wrong, it probably will when it comes to the sailing and the things that are going on there. And that just seems like such a lesson for life, for business, for relationships, for sailing, for blogging and writing a book. You know, maybe you can just tell me how do you look at a list like this and still have passion for whatever the activity is?
Well, as many things that are on that list, there were so many more blessings that outweighed the issues that we had that it was easy to look beyond that, Andy. It was just such a phenomenal experience that I'm glad we did it, and I would do it again. I wouldn't No, I wouldn't do it again. I would.
There we go.
Done that, but it was so worth doing, and just stepping out of your comfort zone and trying something you've never done before and challenging yourself, that has its own rewards.
Great. So, are you willing to stick around while I turn over to Jeff now?
Yeah, I'd like to listen.
Okay. I got to tell you, you can't see because you phoned in, but he has written a whole page of notes while I've been talking with you, and I'm curious to find out what they are. Jeff Sheehan is an integrated marketing and social media consultant. He hosts Sheehan Marketing blog and has over, as I said earlier, 93,000 followers on Twitter. Jeff focuses on helping business professionals, nonprofits, and individuals maximize their marketing presence, their marketing share, and sales revenue. He's had extensive experience working with companies of all sizes in multiple industries and throughout the world. Good morning, Jeff, and welcome.
Good morning, Tim. Thank you for having me.
Do you have a particular focus for your blog?
Basically, as you indicated, my main focus is on integrated marketing because I think it's so critical to really be successful.
Talk to me about what integrated marketing is.
Well, basically, not just social media, but PR, advertising, all mass communications, anything that fits into the marketing mix.
Okay. How often do you post a new blog?
It varies. I try to do it once a week if I can. However, depending upon my schedule, because I do speak quite frequently, and that takes a lot of time at various church ministries on using LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Google for job searches. So in between that and trying to work with on a consulting basis in that, when I find the time, I try to blog. And then I try to get input from guest bloggers, and that can help fill some of the blogging time that I don't have a chance to fill.
He's being very gracious as he says that because he's asked me to blog for him once and I I haven't done it yet. But I did suggest that he turn to Betsy, my independent contractor, and she did come up with one.
Yeah, absolutely. And right now, as soon as I can figure out my flash conflict on my PC, then I will get that blog up and
You'll
running.
Get it up there.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you try once a week, which means essentially you're going out there once a week. And I think people get the idea if you're going to blog, you have to blog every day or you have to do lots of it. Once a week works for you.
I'd like to do it more frequently, but again, it depends upon the time allowance that I have to actually do it.
Do you have any idea how many people are following you on your blog?
Not right now. It's in the thousands.
I just wondered because you have so many on Twitter.
Right.
How did you manage that on Twitter? Now, I know you're being intentional about that, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I started a year ago, March, concerted effort to build my Twitter following. The reason being is I always envisioned writing a book, and I figured it would be a natural distribution channel for, after having written a book, for publicizing the book and creating that type of critical mass that you need to be successful in that area.
I like that. You know, people ask me if I do Twitter. I have an account. That's all I could say, but I think after what you've said, Jeff, I'd better get busy and use it. Huh?
Well, also, the thing is, I have a real passion for it. I love Twitter. I'm a Twitterholic. Uh-huh. I'm on it quite frequently. It has, again, given the numbers, it actually went over 94,000 last night. So continues to grow. It becomes, one thing I'd like to do is I like to keep in communication as much as possible with the people that are following me on Twitter, but it's becoming very overwhelming in a lot of respects in trying to communicate and respond to them on a daily basis. The ones that mention me or they send me direct messages and that, but I do my best.
Well, I like that idea. You're really practicing what you teach. Some people would call it preaching, but it's what you teach in your business, and I like that because I'm doing quick math. If you got a 2% rate of return, if you tweeted to your 94,000 people, you'd be selling almost 100 books right there. If that's at a 2% return, and you would do better than that. And since most books sell less than 300 copies, when your book is written and ready to go, you're going to exceed the 90% of books out there.
Well, you have to remember, though, one of the things in the fallacies about Twitter and also about Facebook and any of these other social media channels, the number of followers does not necessarily equate to the connection. Okay, so you have to understand that although they're followers, the level of engagement in that does not necessarily, it's not a one-to-one correspondence.
Oh, I understand that.
So you have to be careful with that. And any of the social media experts, opponents that tell you, okay, I can go out and get you so many likes and get you so many followers, they're being somewhat disingenuous because of the fact that the correlation is not necessarily there with regard to, you know, who's following you and the level of engagement, or will they buy your product if you put it out there?
Boy, I opened the door for you on that one, didn't I? I'm glad I did. That's what sets you apart, I think, from a lot of the other social media I deal with. You're going to give it straight and realistic. I'll tell you what I was looking at is, excuse me, in terms of, you always expect, if you do a mass mailing, so let's say a mass email or Twitter thing, 2% of 94,000 is about 180 or so, like something like that, if I'm doing my math.
No, 1,800.
Really, yeah. So, and then out of that, if you get a 1% actual purchase, you're doing good. You're doing good. And even though it's a light connection, I think it still has possibilities. So,
can I inject something also? One of the things going on now in the whole social media arena with regard to these followers and likes, there are actually companies out there selling Facebook likes and Twitter followers, and if they're selling them throughout the internet, and so that's why I'm getting back to this. If you see someone with a large number of followers and not large number of likes, you have to peel back the onion to see what are those actual followers represent of those likes. So if you go into an account that has an awful lot of followers,
mm-hmm.
look at the people that are behind those followers and make a determination. How many followers do they actually have? How many times have they tweeted? Because that'll give you an idea of the sense of the how solid those respective followers are for that particular individual or business. The same thing with Facebook likes. Take a look at the likes, and you'll see that same type of correlation, I should say, with regard to the background of these people. So very critical factor if you're analyzing someone's followers on that.
You know your stuff. I like that. Now, you mentioned earlier that you're working your way to writing a book. You and I have talked about your writing a book, as a matter of fact. What do you plan on sharing in your book?
Basically getting back to the integrated marketing and that all the aspects are important parts of marketing. I think that's something that's so overlooked today. And if you look at one of my original blog posts when I first started blogging back in January, it was concerning the 4 P's of marketing. I think that, you know, getting back to basic marketing 101, mm-hmm. the 4 P's are still alive. Some people have buried them. They're 6 feet under. As a matter of fact, there's an author out there who took, and she actually buried the 4 P's, said that they had disappeared in the social media arena. I beg to differ because I think if you don't have a product that's good, you don't have it priced appropriately, you don't have a place where that product can be found, and you don't promote it effectively, then it's all for naught. The other thing is, with regard to that, maybe there's been an extension, which in Brian Solis, who's written a number of books, actually 2 books, one called Engagement, has coined it the 5th P, which is people, which reflects the connectivity in the social media era. So that becomes part of this overall equation. But the 4 P's of marketing have not disappeared, and I'd like to emphasize that in the book that I'm writing and talk about how all these aspects really line into integrated marketing approach. The other thing in this whole area, Tim, is I think that the social media tend to overlook the current customer. It's all about client acquisition or lead generation. It has the focus is lost on what do we do to continue to engage with the current customer or client, which is quite critical because the fact that customer acquisition versus retaining a customer is so much more expensive. So the best thing you can do is do whatever you can to service the current customer or client that you have. Now, get rid of the ones that aren't any good or mm-hmm. you know, they're costing mm-hmm. you money or taking up an inordinate amount of time, but really hone in on what can you do for that customer. And then a good friend of ours, Emil Parody, mm-hmm. You use those customers to build a referral base that is going to continue to generate leads for you forever. Mm-hmm. So basically by honing on that and using that, you can do a very, very effective job in that regard.
So when are we going to get that book written here? I want to read it. I want to read it.
As soon as I can.
I understand. That was a loaded question. what are some of the benefits to businesses and professionals in using social media from your perspective?
I think it builds credibility, builds awareness, what builds knowledge of the respective business. It's, like I said, a huge distribution channel. You can talk to or interact with people throughout the world. But now it all depends upon the respective business, because the model, social media and the social media tools do not fill the vacuum, or I should say, are not appropriate for all businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful with regard to what tools you use, depending upon the business you have, the location, the products, the life cycle of the customer that you're involved with, where are they in the buying process? Because each one of these will involve different tools and different approach to the marketing and sales to that respective individual or business.
You have said something that I have not heard other people talk about in the social media kind of thing, and that is, if I heard you correctly, not all businesses should be using social media.
Or parts thereof.
Okay.
I think that they should be on it. However, the tools that they use, their level of engagement, what they do with it are going to vary from business to business, also from the products that they sell, the channels where they are located, you know, whether it's local, mm-hmm. whether regional, national, or global, timing of the product, where the product is in the product life cycle. Now, if you get into the B2B mode, you're going to have other variations as to what you do with social media and how you're actually engaged.
Okay. What is there a mistake in your mind that a lot of companies, businesses, entrepreneurs make in their use of social media?
Yeah, my thing, again, getting back to this aspect of the current customer, mm-hmm. neglecting the current customer, they see social media as being a panacea for everything. But it gets back to the basics, the four Ps. And if you don't take care of the fundamentals, whatever you do in the social media arena is for naught.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have the greatest social media campaign out there, and you can have such a visible impression on the internet. You really look good on the surface. However, if you peel back the onion, look what's underneath that. The substance isn't there. The ability to support that customer with customer service and everything else is going to inhibit your growth of that business or for you being successful.
Well, kind of reflecting the four P's back at you, Jeff, you know, obviously our product is important, and you have knowledge. So you have a product of sorts, but your idea is to get this into a book.
Correct.
So there's a physical product. Take us through the stages. What are some of the challenges that you have faced thus far in getting this book to print, you know, getting it written and getting ready to go to market with it? And maybe what are some of the challenges that you still have to hurdle over before we actually see this thing in stores?
I think the thing is time. Time management is critical. I think if any small entrepreneur, the critical factor is time management. How do you most effectively, between going to networking meetings, volunteer activity, your day-to-day work, keeping up with Twitter, keeping up with Facebook, keeping up with all the others, LinkedIn. I'm a heavy user of LinkedIn, and certainly I teach, give workshops on LinkedIn. I have 2,500-plus connections on LinkedIn, coupled with my 94,000 now on Twitter. So it becomes a monumental task in a lot of respects of managing all of this.
So do you outsource any of that? Do you bring any people in to help
right now,
you on the project?
Right now, I've been doing it with some people, but majority of it has been I've been doing myself.
Gotcha.
What I like about that is that I know you are doing that, so that you're actually, whatever you're talking about, you're practicing.
Correct.
And you're learning the weaknesses and the strengths of it all.
The other thing I was going to tell you is just keeping up with the changes. And that's why I take, at the outset, that a social media expert. I don't consider myself as an expert. And the reason being is the fact that each and every day, something in the social media arena changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant learning curve. And that's one of the things I love about it. I have a passion. I've been a lifelong learner, always looking for continuous improvement. But every day there's a new tool that you could sink your teeth into and try to really learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes very time-consuming. And trying to keep up with all this is a monumental task.
But you're doing a good job of it.
Trying my best.
You're trying your best.
Yes.
If people want to be in contact with you about social media and to push you along to get you writing that book, which I want to get you writing that book, how best they be in touch with you, Jeff?
Basically, you can contact me. My blog is SheehanMarketingStrategies.com. Facebook page is Sheehan Marketing Strategies. And my Twitter is Jeff Sheehan. And you can contact me at JeffSheehan2010@gmail.com.
Okay, and your last name is spelled?
S-H-E-E-H-A-N.
Okay, I wanted to get that out there because he knows his name so well. He says it so fast you can drop that one E. Well, we're going to open up the mics now. You and Michelle can talk to each other if you want. Andy can come in with a question or more. So what did you learn, Michelle, listening to Jeff?
Well, I learned that he reiterated some things that I've often thought about time management with social media and how it can just take over your life. And I've done very little of social media, primarily Facebook. And I often wonder how companies manage that. What I was wondering, Jeff, is what would you say to an author who wants to market their book on Twitter or Facebook? What would be the advantages of using Twitter versus Facebook?
Well, from I have a real strong allegiance and affinity for Twitter. I think what's good about Twitter is you can really target it and hone in on people who have an interest in the sailing arena. From a standpoint, you can also do so on Facebook, but Twitter, you can have a concerted campaign. You can find followers of people that have that interest by doing various searches. There's a tool, search.twitter.com, that goes back into Twitter. Actually, Twitter bought this property. So you can do a search on people, and you can find people that have an interest in that area and start following them. They will invariably follow you back. It used to be that it was almost a 50-50 ratio with regard to fallbacks. It has dropped off, and that's been my experience as Twitter has become more ubiquitous. However, if you follow someone, you show the passion that you have for sailing, you write about it, you blog about it, and you tweet about it, then people will find you and they will start engaging with you and ask about your experience in that. So I find that very, very helpful. However, like on Facebook, I would connect with all your family and friends that you have out there and publicize this book. The other useful tool for helping you with that book would be LinkedIn. I don't know if you're on LinkedIn or not, but I would highly suggest that you participate in LinkedIn too and publicize, tie that into your blog. So some of your blog posts and that go out to LinkedIn, and people will find you and will start engaging with you on LinkedIn.
Well, I got a question for you, Jeff, regarding LinkedIn real quick. So we've seen some bit of a shift there, I think, where once upon a time you could participate in groups and they were really good for asking questions and kind of getting your name and expertise out there. But we're seeing so much more spam going to these groups now. And maybe a lot of these administrators are laying down on the job and not weeding that stuff out. But you know, messages are getting lost in there. How do you stand out clearly, whether it be on Twitter or LinkedIn, so that you're not lost in the crowd and the shuffle?
Well, okay, one of the things, like, with regard to groups, and to be quite honest with you, again, getting back to time management, and I think the one person who does an excellent job is Melissa Galt. And she commented about this, Tim, at the NSA meeting recently.
Yes, she did.
It's basically, you know, allocating an hour a week where you go in and engage, you answer questions and that with regard to what's on LinkedIn. But you pick your groups. You want to make sure that, like you're saying, that there aren't groups that have a lot of spam. They have a large number of members, and that also there's a high level of engagement within those respective groups. Those are going to be the most effective for you. And generally, those groups that have a large number of discussions in that, the moderators will probably police them, so the spam will be limited. You're always going to get spam. I get spam not that frequently, to be quite honest with you. And I'm an open networker. Mm-hmm. I actively go out and try to get people to connect with me because, in fact, on LinkedIn, the larger your network, the more that you can connect with other individuals from second, third degree perspective. And then also from people can find you because of the fact that if you have a large network, they will be able to access you and your network connections accordingly.
Okay. I just, Jeff mentioned Melissa Galt, and she was on Right Here, Right Now back on January the 10th. People who might be interested in hearing what she had to say about social media, you can go into our archives and look up the January 10th show. Any other questions by either of you or any of you for each other? Well, this is where I jump in then and say the clock is, in fact, really on us, and we welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for co-hosting, keeping me on track, and asking your penetrating questions. I love them.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Tim.
Great. And thank you to our guests, Michelle Sharp and Jeff Sheehan. Michelle, your contact information once again, please.
ReluctantSailor.net is my website. ReluctantSailor@me.com is my email, and ReluctantSailor on Facebook.
Okay, and Jeff, your contact information.
Again, the blog is SheehanMarketingStrategies.com, Facebook Sheehan Marketing Strategies, Twitter Jeff Sheehan, and my email is JeffSheehan2010@gmail.com.
Okay. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.writechoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, I always like to encourage you to send an email to them right now to invite them to listen live or to our downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern Time at righterherightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.